Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
All right, Cindy, so we beat the chicken into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Cocoa bomb.
Yeah, I think that was pretty clear.
I hope so.
Really? Are we going to talk about
it? I hope so.
Yeah, so.
And invited you to people's homes.
Yeah.
To fix their cooking mistakes.
Yeah, sure.
So
anyway.
let's get into, I love to eat eggs. I love to eat eggs in France. You have a favorite dish that you think everyone should be able to make. What is that?
So, ous en murette, right? And that is eggs poached in red wine. And I remember the first time I did it for a wine dinner. We were doing a Burgundy dinner. And I was actually nervous because I'd eaten it in France, but I'd never poached an egg in red wine. It just kind of seemed a little odd to me. And if not only because of the way it was going to color the egg, it just kind of doesn't go with it. So I did it. And it was one of the best things I've ever made, honestly. I couldn't believe how beautifully it turned out. And I did use a pretty good Burgundy. I don't remember what it was because it was a long time ago.
If it's eggs poached in red wine, the quality of the eggs are a big deal. And the quality of the wine is a big deal.
Right, exactly. So, you know,
so
it was a good Burgundy. You put the red wine in the pot, and I put a little bit of light chicken stock in with the Burgundy. I did not just use the red wine. And
I think you have a little bit of light chicken stock in your toothpaste.
Oh, well, yeah. Anyway, so I put a little bit of vinegar in too. So I put a tiny bit, like a tablespoon or so of red wine vinegar in. The wine has enough acidity to do the job to poach the egg, but I wanted a little bit of kick. And yes, and we were using local eggs. So these fantastic local eggs and with their rich yellow yolks. So you poach them and you can pre-poach something. So let's say you're doing, you know, you're gonna do this amazing dish. And this is not a breakfast dish, really. I mean, you could certainly have it for breakfast. But this is something that, you know, I would think having Sunday night.
It's meant for later in the later in the day and maybe not a heavy supper.
Yeah. And, you know, you're going to have the same garnishes you did with a coq au vin because it's from the same region. So it's bacon pieces, which they would call lardons, which would be, you know, this is when you ask your butcher for a piece of slab bacon, S-L-A-B, slab bacon, that you can cut yourself. I'm sure butchers, Eddie's or wherever, have this available to you, to them, because they probably slice their own bacon. And you can cut your bacon into cubes, and you render that off or cook it until it's brown and crispy. And don't go too far. You're not burning the bacon. You're just making it nice and crispy. And you also would have pearl onions or some sort of onion product as a garnish. You could do shallots if you wanted instead of pearl onions. And then I use brioche to make a crouton underneath the egg. So that's what the poached egg is going to sit on. And as I said, if you're doing it for, you know, maybe you want to do it for eight people and it's Sunday night, you could pre-poach your eggs and then re-drop. You just cook them until they're formed. And typically when I poach an egg, I put them in, like you could use a coffee cup at home. That's perfect. So you could put your egg in the coffee cup and then you have your poaching liquid at probably just below, right, probably around 180, 160 degrees.
You crack the egg into the coffee cup.
Sorry, yeah. You crack the egg into the coffee cup. Oh, boy.
I don't want anyone taking a whole egg and putting it in a coffee cup and dropping it in the...
crack the egg into the coffee cup, and then you gently pour it into this probably 165, 180 degree liquid. So it should sort of just barely be agitated, barely be boiling and simmering. And you cook your egg for whatever, a minute. And then the dish itself has chicken reduction. Okay, so you have a chicken and veal stock reduction as a sauce that has bacon in it and your little bit of onion product and your brioche toast. And you sit your poached egg on top of your brioche toast, and mushrooms. So you would probably quarter the button mushrooms, saute them in butter, have them on the side as your mise en place. And mise en place means everything in its place. So it's everything that you need to make a dish. Have your mushrooms ready to go. Have your onions ready to go. Have your sauce ready to go. Poach your eggs. Put your dish together. Have your brioche toast hot in the oven. And there you go.
Yeah, an egg dish is the most critical. It's awesome to eat.
Just don't ever cook the poached egg. That's the biggest thing. That's the biggest disappointment, is to not have that runny center.
You need that for the dish to actually work.
Yeah, you need it for the toast. You need it for the sauce.
The acid of the wine and the, you know, and the fat richness of that yolk and the stock reduction.
It's
great,
a great
contrast.
Egg dish.
And a great foil for wine. You just don't need wine that's that tannic.
Okay.
People immediately think, oh, you know, that... Burgundy is a weirdly used word in wine a lot of times in the States because of that thought of Gallo Hardy Burgundy back in the day, you know, in the 60s and 70s, and which was almost always mostly Zinfandel, which is a great big tannic, you know, alcoholic red wine. Burgundy is made from Pinot Noir, And you may think of you may think of some red Burgundy, some Pinot Noir, as being more robust, but none of them are that tannic. None of them should be that powerful. You need something more delicate. You need a Volnay. You need a Pernod Vergelès. You need something not from a great big vintage.
What was the last one?
Pernod Vergelès.
Okay.
It's one of the villages west of the Corton Hill.
Very good.
West of Beaune, also. 2008 vintage, something like that. Not a 9 or a 10, one of the bigger years, but something more delicate, 7 or 8. Will be the thing to do with that dish. I had a version of that dish at a one-star Michelin, and I cannot recall the name of the restaurant, that was super clever. That was the brioche, that was the egg. It was in the Loire. It was poached in the Cabernet Franc from the Loire, and the garnishes were crispy chicken skin and escargot poached in butter with spring garlic, and it was just spectacular.
Love the modern twist on an old dish. That's great.
And they served it with really young, sort of bouncy, blue-fruited sort of Cabernet Franc from the region.
From the Loire. Very good.
And it was just just the same, cuisine de grand-mère dish, but slight twist for a local product there.
Exactly.
And adaptation for the wine being a little bit different.
What are some other good reds from the Loire? I mean, we think of Loire as being a white wine region.
Well, you're in good vintages for Loire, 9, 10, 11. Now, 9, 10, 11, you've got some of the reds from the center of France, the northern part of the Rhone Valley, like Saint-Joseph, Creux Hermitage, Beaujolais, and in the Loire, the center of the Loire, like Chinon or Samur Champigny. Those are Cabernet Franc, 100% reds. And you're in good years for those to play with. And they're things that are not, it's not like drinking high C. It's not a, there's fruit that's there, but there's good acidity that's there. They need something salty, juicy, something, a dish that's stimulating to go with it. It's not something you would sit and just drink on its own like it's soda pop.
Right. Can't handle it.
Unless you have a very French outlook on on wine, let's say.
Well, there's that.
So, okay. After
and you like Jambon Percier, so you're so excited about that dish, you should talk about it.
Jambon Percier is definitely a holy grail dish
for
me.
Yeah, you're always looking for that when we travel.
Well, it's because...
It's made a lot of different ways,
and it's made badly in so many places, and I get excited.
Yeah, you could definitely not like this
dish. And I go in the restaurant, and I like the restaurant that looks good, and the people look like they know what they're doing, and the chef has
a
tummy, and there's good, you're going past the pig farm on the way, it's like they're going to have good ham, and they have a great wine list, and I get a great, great fat glass of Marceau or some bottle age on it, and I order the Jambon Percier, and it comes to the table,
and it's false
pink,
flat.
And it's pink blobby stuff.
Ew.
What Jambon Percier is meant to be, it's a fresh ham terrine.
Right.
It's parsley and ham, and it's literally just ham preserved in aspic. And it usually, it's not meant to be something that's hard cured, but it's like a half cure, like haste. The best ones, it's a hay smoked ham, fresh ham. There's got to be someone in Virginia or something that can make the hams for us to do this. It's making me crazy that we don't have access to it.
That would be great.
But it's literally the quality of the ham, and is it that very lightly hay smoked, sort of like half cured ham, is cut into cubes, and it's gelatin made from the pig's foot, should be the stock that holds it together.
That's right.
And a lot of fresh garlic and a lot of fresh parsley in that jelly. And that is all that it is.
Right.
Pressed into a tureen and baked in a water bath and then chilled and sliced. And it is unbelievable when it's good.
And what you do is you do drop all those ingredients into the terrine mold, and you pour your aspic, which is, that's why you use the pig's foot stock, because pig's feet have a massive amount of gelatin in them, and gelatin is what gives you...
And there's a sweetness to it. That's the thing that's, that's particular.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, but that stock on top of... Yeah, you just pour it over, and you put it in the refrigerator, actually, and that's the end of that. Yeah.
And it's one of those things, if it's super salty ham, it's not interesting. Mm-hmm. If it's just fresh ham that has no cure at all and has no real seasoning to it, it's not interesting. You got to nail it, and you got to nail the freshness and the quality of the parsley and the garlic.
And visually, it's a beautiful dish.
Oh, when it's good, yeah.
It's so pretty. It's pink and green. And
yeah, it's the preppiest,
preppiest
terrine in France.
Well, one of my other favorite dishes from Burgundy is the fact that they have that macaroni and cheese is a traditional, or Lyon is a traditional dish, because the Romans
every child in America should go to.
Yeah, well, this is and I think about the photograph in Paul Bocuse's, not Paul Bocuse, but Who am I talking about?
It is Bocuse.
It is Bocuse.
It has the long macaroni dish in it.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. It's the most, yeah, so it's a gratin dish with the long macaroni. And then he just simply uses Comté, Gruyère to make this, you know, it's a bechamel. So bechamel is cream or milk thickened with a little bit of flour and butter, which is roux, and you add the cheese.
And he melts cheese into it, a lot of it. Comté to me is the great secret. Gruyère is better known, but Comté is from the French side of the mountains. And great flavor, not quite as much salt.
I make that at the restaurant, and it is one of my absolute favorite things to make. And I will just go ahead and throw in my version, which is I use elbow macaroni, boil it for exactly 6 minutes so it's not undercooked. Overcooked, it's perfect. You drain it, just don't, you know, just run cold water over it. And I heat up cream. For 1 quart of cream, I add about 2 ounces of highly reduced chicken and veal stock. And I put probably 3 tablespoons of whole grain mustard in. And I finish with Keen's cheddar, which is this just absolutely ridiculous cheese from England that I love, that has this super earthy, celery, cheddary, incredible taste.
It's almost like what you wish broccoli and cheddar soup sort of tasted like. There's a very natural vegetable flavor to that particular cheddar that's great.
Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty cool dish from Burgundy and Lyon as well.
Now, traditionally, they gratinate that dish in Burgundy, do they not?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Put a little bit of breadcrumb on it and...
And butter.
So how in the world does someone gratin something at home?
That's a good... Well, they have broilers at home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's.
I always forget that people have broilers at home. I don't ever use mine at home, so I forget that there actually is one there.
Well, it's hard to get away from Burgundy.
It certainly is.
But let's.
There are other regions in France.
It's funny. The two other places where you always think immediately, and Alsace is its own world to go into. Let's go to the southwest and of the regions in France where you think immediately, on mange bien. So, you know, the one eats well there. Mm. You think of the Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
And all the classic dishes, whether it's the terrines, all the duck dishes, duck leg confit, dishes with duck leg confit as a garnish, they're so rich, like cassoulet.
From
Toulouse. That's definitely something that people get super excited about. Like, is it night that they're making cassoulet? Are the cassoulet available? That sort of thing, which is just about the richest thing in the world.
It's just such a great...
Which is okay.
Yeah, you never, again, you know, you think of something as a bean, and it's just remarkable dish because so much effort is...
It's a bean casserole, but it's a lot more than a bean casserole.
It certainly is.
So what usually do you find in cassoulet?
Well, we do have that visual of the duck leg confit sticking out of the top of it, and you absolutely have the visual of different sausages from the region.
Well, cassoulet, it also refers to the dish. I mean, it literally is, you know, there's the type of cocotte. Like a big, you know, iron and ceramic cocotte that casserole dish,
right?
that you bake it in.
So you have your cassoulet dish, which we can use gratin dishes that we can find anywhere, or you could even use a casserole, like your mom's kind of casserole dish, where you could buy an old cast iron pan, whatever, or an enamel stove pan, whatever. There are tons of these things available everywhere, so that's easy to find. And you're going to cook your beans very slowly. Always remember that you never add salt to beans in the cooking process. They won't absorb the liquid as well as they should. So you add a wonderful stock, and in this case, I would add definitely pork product, whether, you know, in this case we use pork butt, which is actually the shoulder of the animal, and braise that. So we would cut up, you know, pretty good sized pieces of that, brown it, add onion, definitely add garlic. Absolutely. I add wine to mine, and I don't know that that's necessarily traditional, but I always put red wine in my cassoulet, and definitely some bacon product. So you're going to have pork butt as well.
You said pork 3 times already.
I could probably say it 25 more times, as a matter of fact. But the garlic is super important. The onion product is extremely important. A great stock is important. And then you slow cook the beans. And then the garnish is indeed whatever kind of sausage. You know, it could be, well, and also traditionally the tarbay bean, T-A-R-B-A-I-S, which is a big white bean and very long cooking bean, is what is used to make cassoulet.
It has a thick skin, it doesn't
region.
Break down so much.
Yeah, it's long cooking. I use cocoa beans from Spain to make my cassoulet when I make it.
Well, your adaptation, you often do with rabbits,
so
it's much shorter cooking.
Yeah, and that's what I do where I cook every day. When we make it at one of our other restaurants, they use white beans. They just use cannellini beans.
Cannellini is even navy beans one.
Exactly, right. Yeah. So there are different ways to do it, but the whole point is that pork product, that great stock, lots of garlic, and then these wonderful sausages as a garnish.
Yeah, usually you see lamb, pork, and duck in the dish in different ways. Lamb might be lamb neck, which has good fat and very good flavor.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that if you want to develop extra flavor in the stuff, I mean, having had it near Madiran in like a really rich country version, the lady told me that she took the lamb neck and browned that with the garlic in the pan first.
That's great.
Added mirepoix, then added beans, then added pork stock and a pig's foot.
Why not?
An entire pig's foot. I mean, she was doing a huge... She was doing one dish for 20 people at this winery that day.
Well, and then the other part is of course, the crust, which, you know, the whole story, and maybe you know the story a little bit better than I do, but I think the story is that, you know, back in the day, you'd have a baker in your village, and that baker, one day a week,
there's only
all the
one
ladies,
oven that's big.
Yeah, exactly. There's one oven that's big enough to do this. All the ladies would bring their cassoulet down. When the baker was done with baking for the day, the embers are dying. The cassoulet sits in there overnight. And then, of course, the story is they don't even want to open up the front door because they don't want to disturb the wind to disturb the cassoulet, yeah. Right? So this is very old traditional dish, but you do need the breadcrumb on top at the end of the process of baking off the cassoulet.
Yeah, they always say that the down there making the crust, because there's enough fat in the and juice in the stock, as it reduces, you take a little spoon, break it, take some of the juice and the fat, pour it over the crust, and just kind of baste the crust itself it finishes in the oven, as it browns with that fat.
I wish we had one right now. I need that dish.
So with that dish, you need a big red wine from the Southwest and also likely a cardiologist.
Well,
when we come back on Farm & Wolf on Food & Wine, we're going to have with us Ann Willen, fabulous cookbook author. We're super excited to have her on.
Absolutely.
And,
it's just such a treat. It's a treat for everybody.
This should be a great segment on Farm & Wolf on Food & Wine.